Ladies and gentlemen of Lafayette.
The Hammer Down Show with Jared Jussolaitis is Lafayette's number one sports show.
Yes, I'm excited!
He totally went to Jared.
The voice of Lafayette sports.
The cream of the crop! Nobody does it better.
Send us your thoughts on the text line at 765-447-4080.
Now go to that voodoo that you do so well!
Wait until you see what they just got done approving for today. Plenty of stuff to talk about. All right. You always chime in on the Blue Fox Heating Cooling Hammerhead Hotline by texting in at 765-447-4080. At 765-447-4080. Let's get started with Need to Know News.
Here's your Need to Know News.
It's a career-high 15 points for Milo Reynolds as... Two 20-point quarters in the middle of the game propelled Purdue's women's basketball team to a 62-51 victory in Hinkle Fieldhouse last night over the Butler Bulldogs in the second round of the WNIT. That was win number 50 for Coach Katie Gerrals here at Purdue. Janae Terry's second rebound put her to 1,000 rebounds for her career. She became the first player in Big Ten history, men or women, to record 1,000 points, 1,000 rebounds, and 700 assists in a career. Purdue will host Duquesne in the Sweet 16, the Super 16. It's in the WNIT. That'll be Thursday night, 7 o'clock. Tickets are now available. We'll have the folks on from Purdue Sports here in a little bit, and they can tell you all about that. Way to go. You love to see it. Good stuff. Men's golf making a late charge. And let me see if I can pull up their scoreboard right now, because I typed this up like 15 minutes ago and perhaps some stuff has changed. But at last I checked, they're at the Hootie at Bulls Bay, second place, tied at 10 under with New Mexico. Unfortunately, they've slipped here. They're down to 8 under. They still got people on the course, which means I got to update the player leaderboard on the fly. Nick Dantino, through 15 still. He is 1 under on the day, 6 under for the tournament, and that is tied with 5 other players for first place. Herman Secchi was really going there. He was at 5 under. Well, he must have had a disaster. He had a disaster on 18, shot a double bogey, and finished with a 72 today. Well, he had a heck of a round yesterday, and he was doing great here. Eagled 6 today. Ugh, you hate to see that. But he slides down to 12th. Peyton Snowberger from Purdue sits at 13th. He's through 15. But not really a shot to make it into first place there. He's 5 strokes off the lead. But if he were to get a... I'll go 1 under here. He could tie Secchi at 12. Gets 2 more under here, he can move to the top 10. Nel Sertani sits at 18th. He's even after he finished. God, he was another guy that was up there. What did he finish? Birdie, bogey. He finished double bogey. Bogey, double bogey, birdie, bogey. No, wait. They just colored this really weird. I'm sorry. Nels finished birdie, double bogey, bogey, birdie. They finished 71 under for the day. Look, it's a long way of saying you had 4 Purdue players in the top 20. Still a chance to maybe grab second at this tournament. Baseball tonight, heading out to Terre Haute. Windy Tuesday night to face Indiana State. Speaking of baseball, Cubs fall in spring training yesterday, 6-3. The Cards, Wicks toss 4 innings, 3 hits, 1 earned, 4 Ks. Seiya Suzuki homer twice. They're going to run it back one more time today, and that'll be the final game for the spring. Cubs will open up the season on Thursday in Texas when they take on the defending champs. Meanwhile, the White Sox are done for spring. They'll pack it up. They'll head home. Detroit comes to the South Side on Thursday. Now, as I was alluding to at the top of the show, NFL owners approved a very big revamp of the kickoff. 3 days of discussion, apparently they come to the conclusion this is what they're going to do. Kickers will continue to kick off from the 35-yard line. The other 10 players on the kickoff team will line up at the receiving team's 40-yard line. At least 9 members of the return team will line up in a setup zone between the 35 and the 30-yard lines. Up to 2 returners can line up in a landing zone between the goal line and the 20-yard line. No one other than the kicker and returners can move until the ball hits the ground or hits a player inside the landing zone. Touchbacks will be marked at the 30-yard line. No fair catches will be allowed. In the event a team wants to attempt an onside kick, it will have to inform officials of its intent, so no more surprise onside kicks. They are a thing of the past. We'll talk about it. Blackhawks back in action tonight. They will be hosting the Flames. Calgary's lost their last 3. Every loss has covered the puck line, too. Bulls come up short last night to the lowly Wizards, 107-105. The Pacers over the Clippers, 113-116. I'm like, I didn't write it 113-116. But there you go. That is today's need-to-know news for this Tuesday, the 26th. Of March. Kind of a bummer, man. The Bulls losing that one last night. Should not be losing to the Wizards. Should be a better team than that. Not playing like it. That's why they're sitting in 9th right now in the East. Pacers, though, right above that 6-7 line there that you want to be in. They're 2 games behind Orlando for 5th and 3 games behind the Knicks for 4th. 3.5 games behind the Cavaliers for 3rd. Meanwhile, Miami's a game behind them. Philadelphia's a game and a half behind them. So, yeah, that 3rd through 8 spot right now, that's 5 games between 5 teams. Tough stuff. Got to get it going. All right, yesterday we talked about those Purdue lines and futures, right? And we implored you to take stuff early. If you were going to be on Purdue, if you were going to be on, you know, say the Zach Edey points and things of that nature, to get on it early, still sitting at 5.5. I also love, by the way, if you use a book that can use first basket score, Zach Edey always at +220, I love. Brayden Smith is like 6-1 to score the first bucket. Some good value on some of those. As for points, Zach's still sitting at 25.5, although the odds for that have gotten a little less favorable for you. And like I said, I always love to go to that points, rebounds, and assists for Brayden. And we're at 24.5. You're still in that range. Once it's 25.5, I don't like to touch it. But 24.5. At -104, are all things that I say, okay, we're good on that. But look, let's try to get something tonight. Let's see what we can do tonight. And our good friends, the Chicago Blackhawks, are once again in action, hosting a Calgary team that, quite frankly, has struggled here over the last week and a half. They've not been good. They haven't been great since the trade deadline, right? It's another team here that they gave it up. They let Lindholm go. Tanev and Hanifin got traded away as well. It's a Tanev and Hanifin combo that at the trade deadline's killed them. 3-7 and a minus 14 goal differential since they got rid of those two players. It's not been good for them. Meanwhile, the Blackhawks, since getting Bedard back, have shown some signs of life, which they should. It's a young team. They're having to go through and take their lumps here. Apparently, Richardson yesterday ran them hard even after the win, saying, I know we skipped out of that game lucky on top, but we weren't happy with our performance in two games. That's just not professional enough for me. You have to do it every day. Sometimes that's the way the game is played. So it sets home that it's really unacceptable for the standard that we want to have for the work ethic. So we worked in practice today. So message sent before this. Again, you got a Calgary team here that has slumped over the last 10. I already told you the last three games, Washington, Vancouver, and Buffalo. Two of those three were at home. And all of those losses have been by at least two goals or more. And here's the best part, guys. Because it's the Blackhawks, we're actually getting a pretty decent price here, plus 150. I'm taking the Blackhawks tonight at plus 150. We won't get too cute with it on a Tuesday. But I'll take the Blackhawks at home. Let's see if they can get the upset. They've beaten the Flames once before, 4-3. They lost the second game, which was in Calgary, 1-0. I'll take plus 150. That's the move. Again, our friends over at ESPN Bet got that line for you. Jump on it. Let's go. I don't know who's in goal tonight. Hopefully it's Mrazek. That will be better for us. But get into it now. Plus 150. Scoop it up while you still can. All right, we're going to take a break. Hang tight. We're going to come back here. Let's take a look at Gonzaga a little bit here. See what we like, see what we don't like, see what's changed since Maui. That's coming up next. Hang tight. It's the Hammer Down Show on 101.7 The Hammer and 101.7thehammer.com. Welcome back. It is the Hammer Down Show. It's on 101.7 The Hammer, 101.7thehammer.com. I mean, you would probably know that. You're only listening to the show here, and you probably adjusted your radio dial or went to the website to listen to it, or maybe you got the app, whatever it is. Thank you for having us on here. All right. Purdue, Gonzaga, Friday night rematch from Maui. What to expect? Expect the unexpected, right? Look, there's going to be a lot made of this is a Gonzaga team that has very much improved since the first meeting. But this is also a Purdue team that has improved from that meeting. Right? And if I'm comparing resumes now, the Big Ten schedule versus the WCC schedule, what do you... we know how that is, right? A lot of quad four. But let's take a look at Gonzaga. Comes in, 7th scoring offense, 83rd scoring defense. 7th in effective field goal percentage. They shoot the ball 51.6%. Solid rebounding team. Don't force turnovers. Don't particularly give them up, though. They don't shoot threes. Let me rephrase that. They don't attempt a lot of threes under 7 a game. It's 229th. Good, well-rounded team. They're 6-3 on the year, neutral sites. You can't really let the WCC thing fool you, though. Because they have played some good teams this year, right? Yale was in the tournament. They got that victory. That was, they let off with that at the beginning of the season. They went and played Washington in Washington. That was a 5-point loss. They played UConn. That was a 13-point loss. San Diego State, 10-point loss, another tournament team there. Disappointing loss at Santa Clara, 77-76. But hey, we all have those in tournament play. And then they'd lose two at St. Mary's, but win one of them. They won the game at St. Mary's. They lost the home game at the end of the year against St. Mary's. Two wins over San Francisco, who had a 66 in the net. They beat Kentucky at Rupp Arena. So there's some impressive stuff that I like in there, especially when you get into February, the two wins against San Francisco, which were both double-digit wins. The win against St. Mary at St. Mary, another double-digit win, 70-57. I like it. They handled Kansas. Now, I understand, no McCullers, and I get that I'm with you there, Hunter Dickinson. I'm not as high on as people seem to be that some folks were naming second-team All-American. I don't buy that for a second. I think the name on the front of the jersey helped them a little bit more than the name on the back, but that's me. A Kansas team not at full power, but you still beat them by 21. That should have your attention. As to what to expect, I gave you the numbers. You know where this game is going to be played, in the trenches. What do they do with Zach Edey? That'll be the question. During conference play, did not appear to double a lot. They like to go one-on-one in the post. But, as you know, Zach Edey is different. He requires different attention. And so they'll have a decision to make. Doing some kind of bracketing here? Are you going to go in with the double end of the post and try to make the guards shoot threes? Which I don't understand why more teams don't do. I get that Purdue shoots well, but you're still forcing a lower percentage shot from out there. Give it a try. I mean, Illinois did this, right? They came out at the half of that second game and said, all right, let's see if you can hit them. And then Purdue hit them, and they said, all right, we'll get away from it. But I don't know why more teams don't dare Purdue to hit those threes, see if they can do it, and then adjust accordingly. That seems like a better option than just fouling Zach Edey or letting Zach draw those fouls. He had 25-14 in that first matchup in Maui. That was a game where both teams had 38 rebounds. Again, fought in the trenches. Gonzaga did not shoot well. I told you they shoot 51% on the season. 37% in Maui, 18% from three. They were 6-32. Now, Purdue was much better from behind there, 4-17. But 46% shooting field goals versus 37, you're probably going to edge just about everybody out. Purdue shot 13-16 from the free throw line versus 5-8 for Gonzaga. I mean, and Nebhard was great. You look at the spread that they had there. Ike with 10, Watson with 10 attempts, Hickman with 14, Nebhard with 17 attempts. Those are the starters, and I mean, just a wonderful spread there, right? No one person really shouldering the load, but Nebhard in particular was bad in that game. 5-17, 1-9 from 3. I mean, they need the guy that was in the conference play who scored 20 against St. Mary's and 13 in the last game. But against McNeese, you know, they rolled in Kansas, they rolled, but 8-5 is the greatest in the world. He had 12 assists, though, in that Kansas game. So he's going to continue to be real versatile. But make no mistake about it, this is not the Utah State stuff here. I still don't feel as if They've got a ton on the inside defensively. Again, they've got a lot of experience posting up on the defense and slowing that down. But they, I mean, make no mistake, they got whistled for 19 fouls in Maui. They'll probably have that or more. I mean, you had Ike and Watson, both listed as forwards, had four fouls. And your forwards that you brought off the bench in that one had three and two. I mean, they are going to go at Edie again. But for the life of me, like I said, I don't understand why more teams just don't go, hey, let's see if they can hit the three first before we start going through fouls one-on-one. But if that's the way Gonzaga wants to play, that's the way Gonzaga plays it. I find it ill-advised, personally. Purdue also had 13 turnovers in that one. Gonzaga, uncharacteristically, had 14. That was another thing that really stood out to me when you go back and you look at that game from back in December in Maui. And a lot of those turnovers for the Boilermakers were unforced, which is frustrating. And in Gonzaga, like I said, they don't turn the ball over. They don't force turns. They certainly don't turn the ball over. I don't think Purdue's going to be able to count on 14 turnovers and 36, 37% shooting from Gonzaga. They're going to have to go out there and earn it. But Purdue's defense, the real X factor here, because I think people sleep on that, because you're so focused about what Zach Edey does offensively. And there's one other thing that usually jumps out at me this time of the season. And that's free throws, right? But both these teams shoot, they're literally ranked 169 and 170th in free throw percentage. Right? That's where I look for that, like that it's close. What kind of an edge can I get? I usually like to take a look at the free throw percentages because that'll tell you a lot. Not a big difference between these two teams. 5.5 points. I think this one's going to be tight. But I still like the Boilermakers this Friday night. Still like them, still rolling with them. Still like Zach Edey to have a big night. We're going to take a break. Don't you go anywhere. The NFL is changing its rules. What have they done to my beloved game? What you should know about this new kickoff rule. Is it good? Is it bad? Hey, let's talk about it next here on the Hammer Down Show on 101.7 The Hammer and 101.7thehammer.com. Welcome back to the Hammer Down Show on 101.7 The Hammer and 101.7thehammer.com. To the Blue Fox Heating, Cooling, Hammerhead Hotline. The whole gang here from Purdue Sports. Ready to talk about a big, big week here going on with Purdue Athletics. Guys, it's always great to have you on. Purdue, big win yesterday down at Hinkle Fieldhouse. They beat Butler, which means they're advancing in the WNIT. The women will be back. This is Thursday. And actually, they're going to play in Mackey Arena, aren't they? Are tickets available for that now?
Yeah, you're correct. So they are back home. Top basketball is over. It's not over yet, at least not at home. So women's basketball is back in Mackey on Thursday at 7 p.m. They face Duquesne, which will be an exciting matchup for us. Tickets are on sale as of 10 o'clock this morning to our John Sleep Club members, and then we'll be open to our general public fans at 1 o'clock this afternoon, so keep an eye out on the social pages and PurdueSports.com for all of that info.
Good. So those are up and good to go. Make sure you're picking those up. Women's WNIT Thursday night. Let's move on to other stuff we got going on this weekend. Softball is back in Biddinger this weekend. They've got three games and celebrations on each of those days, starting on Friday. Tell me about softball.
Yeah, so like you said, softball is back this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. They'll be hosting Rutgers. Friday will be our mental health awareness night, and we'll also have bingo and some fun games for fans. Oh. That game's at 5 p.m. Saturday is Riley Day, so we're going to show some support for the Riley Children's Hospital and honor some of those families over there. That game will be at 2 p.m. And then Sunday on Easter, we're going to have an Easter celebration. So come out and celebrate Easter at Bedinger with Purdue softball. We'll have an Easter egg hunt open to all ages. And keep your eyes peeled for the golden egg. It has a special prize.
Ooh.
Sunday's also our first Bark at the Park game. So as a reminder, each Sunday home game, dogs are welcome at Bedinger. So check that out. That game will be at 1 p.m. and admission is free all season long.
That's not fair. Bring out the bloodhounds to try to find that golden egg there. That's cheating with the dogs. All right. That's cool, though. But I love that softball is free to attend and Big Ten matchup all weekend against Rutgers. Get out there and support Coach Bang and the rest of that squad. Now, men's tennis has got a couple of Big Ten matchups this weekend, including Easter Sunday, don't they, Caitlin?
They do, yeah. We are actually kicking off the conference season for men's tennis this weekend, starting on Friday at 4, where they face Ohio State. They wrap up the weekend for us in events on Sunday, Easter Sunday as well, at noon against Penn State. Great couple matchups in line. It's also free admission over at the Schwartz Tennis Center.
You'll love to see that. We know that volleyball is down on the road at Hamlin Southeastern on Friday, and I know they, if you didn't notice, they did change the timing on that because I'm going to go ahead and be a conspiracy theorist. I think Coach Shondell just wants to make sure he can watch the Boilermaker basketball game. I think that's why they bumped it up early, but I'm sure there's an actually legit reason why they did it. But if you can't make it out to that, look, soccer is actually out at Folk Field and taking on Indiana. This is March, right? We're doing soccer at Folk Field versus IU?
Yeah, they've got an exciting spring game scheduled. That'll be at 1 p.m. Admission is also free to that.
All right, so get out there and support the women's soccer team. We want to remind you that it's never too early to start thinking about your football season tickets, is it?
No, it's not. football season tickets are on sale. I will say we have sold out of 4 of our sections already in
the
stadium. So if you're looking to get tickets, I would do it sooner rather than later so you can get your choice of section and seating that you want.
There you go. And don't forget the spring game is coming up on the 13th. Yes, you guys will have plenty of stuff planned for that, I'm sure.
Yep, exactly. Spring game's coming up on us. It's a free event for fans. It's kickoff at noon. So if you're looking for something fun to do, in addition to the other things on campus, that is a great spot to come join us.
Yeah, and just, you know, even if you forgot what it was like to go out to a spring game, since we didn't have anything last year, this will be fun. So make sure you go out. It'll be a big day on the 13th of April. Guys, it's always a pleasure. I'm looking forward to all of this week. We'll talk to you next Tuesday. Boiler up.
Boiler up.
Make sure you go out there, get those tickets. Women's basketball back in Mackey on Thursday night. That's going to be great. Okay, so here we go. The NFL with some overhauls here. Right, it's that time of the year. Here's what's been going on with the owners and the meetings and all that stuff. Okay, we talked about, and let me get into the kickoff thing here in a second. But other things that happened, NFL will play 2 games on Christmas, Wednesday. That's going to go well. I mean, are all 4 teams going to be on the bye week before it? To play on a Wednesday? How are you supposed to go from playing on a Sunday to turn around and play on a Wednesday? When we saw viewership from this past year on Christmas, really our fans spoke. Buddy, we're all stuck with our families. We're looking, it's the middle of the day. We've done all the presents and everything. We had to go get batteries. Had to go run out and get batteries, man. Had to put batteries there. You had to put everything together. We're just excited to sit down and watch something to where we're like, hey, listen, I get like a half hour to myself. Go away. Of course the ratings are good on Christmas. Still, I think it's kind of wrong. I think those guys do the day off. Right? I know when it falls on a Sunday, it's one thing, but we're going to do games on a Wednesday? See, they do these things in the name of player safety, and then they turn around and do these things in the name of money, and then you get questions. You get a lot of questions. But they're going to play a couple games on Christmas this year, they announced. If you were not happy about Peacock and Amazon getting games, well, guess what? That's happening again. The league announced that Peacock will have the rights to stream the week one game from Sao Paulo. The Eagles will play in that one. We don't know who the Eagles will play. Prime Video gets an NFL wildcard game. So if you were frustrated with that, it's going to continue. Because the fans really spoke with all those things. Because it was either not watch the game or get the subscription. So, but the fans spoke. NFL will move the trade deadline back to week 9. The NFL trade deadline is about the most boring trade deadline in all of sports. How many trade deadline moves that you can think of in the NFL? In the history that you watch the NFL, come up with like the trade week deadline moves that you can remember. Okay, that's what I thought. You can think of like in-season trades here and there, but never like we get to the trade deadline and like people are flying like it's the NBA or the NHL. Like it don't happen. Also, they're getting closer to letting Brady become part owner of the Raiders. But the news so far has been the hip drop tackle, which the NFL yesterday, Troy Vince came out and said, hey, listen, it's not going to be this big thing. It's going to be more like the helmet contact. You're not going to see like flags fly all the time. The heck I'm not. Why are we going to let something? Because you watch the video of them talking about the hip drop tackle, and I said to myself, what's going to happen when somebody's coming and trying to tackle from the side? There's a swim move. They slip. It just, how you, it feels like you got to judge intent. Almost, right? There's what physics is making your body do, and then there's you trying to physically pull down somebody by taking all your weight and dropping your hips. That's like, remember they used to have the out-of-bounds rule? Where, like, if you were a receiver and you caught it in the air and you were carried out of bounds, if the officials determined that you could have gotten 2 feet in without the defensive player carrying you out, you'd be in bounds. Remember how bad that rule stunk? And I think that's the important thing to think of here is, you know, they can go back and re-litigate that, right? They can say, this isn't working. They could treat it like the cylinder rule. I love talking about the cylinder rule, where we made this big point of emphasis about the cylinder and that everybody complained about it in that non-conference when it was the big point of emphasis. And then what happened? It faded off, and now nobody calls it. But it's only a matter of time before some team gets screwed over because an official can't do a good job at determining the hip drop there, and it ruins a game-winning drive. It extends a game-winning drive. That's coming. That's 100% coming. And then here we are to the kickoff rule, which looks like the old XFL kickoff rule. Now, here's the difference. In the XFL, they lined up farther down the field between the 30 and the returning to the 30, 35-yard lines. 90% of kickoffs were returned during the XFL's two seasons with that rule. The NFL's hoping for a return rate of 80%. And I get, you know, the running and the boom, you're smacking into each other is not as great. But here, I mean, this feels like you put out some bigger bodies. You're looking for a hole here. You got 10 yards to find a hole. It's like putting a running back there and then lining up everybody all across that yard line. And now all of a sudden you're just looking for some matchups where your two best blockers, you know, open up that hole and then you go right through it. I think it's going to increase the number of kickoff returns. I think it's going to drastically change how you draft players in your fantasy leagues as well. I think under that format, with some of the best athletes, the speed that you have back there, 80%? If you got a return rate of 80%, what's the percentage of those that go back for touchdowns in this new format? Because I think that's what it looks like. But the whole reason we're doing this is reduce concussions on the kickoffs. Just get rid of the kickoff then. No more surprise onsides. You can do an onside, but you got to alert everybody that there's going to be an onside. The league data showed that last year the league return the return rate fell to a league record 21.7% touchback rates. Number of concussions dropped as well. What does that tell you? Now, if we don't run into each other at a high speed, we don't hurt ourselves. Look, I like the kickoff. I find it exciting. But what you need now in special teams has just shifted, has it not? You need bigger bodies to block up front, which means you're probably using more of your linemen than you like to. And now defensively, you're going to need more linebackers instead to be able to take on bigger blockers. And then you're going to get a guy like Tyreek Hill that's just running around until there's a hole that opens up. It's one thing in the XFL, but I think you have such dynamic athletes that this is going to change. It just changes everything. Not sure how much I love it. Roger Goodell says, I think it will be a positive. I say that with a little bit of hesitation. We will still have to tinker with it. We'll reevaluate it as the season goes on. I think it'll be a big improvement. I think it will bring it back to a relevant play, an exciting play. I don't know. You know, we could get to week 5 and say, hey, we were all freaked out about nothing. It's fine. They did do one thing at these meetings here this week that I did like. Allowing teams to receive a third challenge after the first one is successful, right? So you already have two. So if you hit 500 on your challenges, you get the third one instead of when you had to get both of them. So it always felt bad. You could make the right call on a challenge, and then they don't have a good camera angle for whatever reason. Somebody's in the shot. You can't see it. You can't piece it all together for... You know, it'd be 100% conclusive. I like giving them the third one. Also, they change. If there's a double foul during a down in which there is a change or changes of possession, including if one of the fouls is a post-possession foul by a team during a scrimmage kick, the team last gaining possession will keep the ball after enforcement for its foul, provided it did not foul before the last gaining possession. Hold on a second. I need to draw that up on a whiteboard and figure that all out. But that's what they changed. That's what to expect. We'll see what the points of emphasis end up being for officials too this season. We'll see what they want to work on. But this is not going to look like the NFL that you just watched 2 months ago in the Super Bowl. We're going to take a break, come back, and we'll try to wrap it up with things we missed next on 101.7 The Hammer. Just a couple minutes left here on The Hammer Down Show on 101.7 The Hammer and 101.7thehammer.com. Time for some of the things that we may have missed. USA Basketball's named its members for the first ever 3-on-3 men's national team to play in the Olympics. And it includes Jimmer Fredette And it does not have Robbie Hummel on it, and that just makes me sad. Remember when he was running that? We all thought he was going to get the medal, and then turns out there was some weird qualifying to get in, and it's not fair, man. Robbie should have got himself a medal. All right, the Boilermakers are done at the Hootie at Bulls Bay. They will finish third, two strokes behind New Mexico. Nick Dantino had a shot to win it all. He bogeyed the last two holes, finishes 5-under, tied for fourth, one stroke off of the lead. Peyton Snowberger and Herman Secchi both a 12th at 2-under. But still, you had four Nel Sertani at even, finished 19th. So you had four Boilermakers in the top 20. Still a good showing there from Purdue. And then finally, a lot being made over Caleb Williams. He's got a, looks like a pink phone cover and stuff. People are kind of clowning on him. But that's not the take that I'm looking at from last year. It's RG3 went back on Twitter. Monday, he was one of these guys that was very much in this camp of, hey, I love what Deion Sanders is doing with his, you know, with his boys at Colorado, saying he's not going to let certain teams draft him because he doesn't want them playing in certain cities. You know, they can just do what they want to, and I, you know, I spoke on that. But RG3 would say this is the player empowerment age; it's happening. Deal with it. They're going to decide where they go. It's like, no, they're not going to decide where they're going to go. They can have preferences and they can make threats. They can also be prepared to sit out for a year, too. But he came back to kind of double down on things today when he talked about Caleb Williams should tell Chicago to not draft him. And he says Chicago does not have his best interest at heart. Look at what happened with Justin Fields. They do not have your best interest at heart. What do you mean, look at Justin Fields? They weren't going in the direction they thought that he was going to take them. They have the number one overall pick. It's the most important position, and they think this is a good spot to upgrade that position, which they think is you. You know who doesn't have your best interest? Robert Griffin III, man. He's in his interests include going out there and saying things for clicks and engagement. That's his interest. Please do not listen to him. You're paying an agent, you're paying a manager, and you pay him for a reason. You listen to them. You don't listen to guys like that. And from my understanding, it's not like he is listening to it, but there is a man with a very big megaphone saying outlandish things. And I just think, yeah, whatever. That does it for us today on the Hammer Down Show. We're back tomorrow at 3 o'clock here on 101.7 The Hammer.